Okay, can you just say your name and what years you jumped?
Howard Betty, Twist, Washington. Started as a trainee in 1948 in the spring, the year that we had the very large flood in this country. So consequently, we didn't have any roads and very few trails, very few fires. And let me see, I think it was the late fall of 54 was my last year. During that time, that fall of 48, started college and completed college in 52, and then kept on here until 54.
What was your rookie training like?
Very uneventful.
Yeah. How about your first jump?
I suspect most people would say their first one was very vivid in their minds, but it was never that way with me. I guess I didn't know any better, so it took about till the third till I really got smart and figured out that maybe this really wasn't for me.
But you kept going anyway.
Oh, yes. Really had to do a lot of talking to myself to get out the door. After the next year, well, then it was a piece of cake from then on.
How about your first fire jump? Remember that?
There was a kid by the name of Gordy Wood from Wenatchee who was my jump partner, and we never have ever heard back from Gordy. I don't know if he's still alive or what, but never, and no one has ever contacted him. We jumped up on Fawn Peak. We had a pilot, I don't know if it was his first fire jump or what his problem was, but he put one wingtip down and just kept circling on that one wingtip. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, my jump partner just about drowned going down in his own puke. Had the old type mask that had the buckles on instead of bungee, and you had to be able to undo the buckle to lift the mask. Naturally, in an emergency situation, you can't do that. And came back from that fire and with that experience, and shortly thereafter they changed to rubber bungees on the mask. Horrible experience.
Yeah, I bet.
We were the first ones, I might also say, on this forest anyway, to be lifted off of a fire by a helicopter. I think it was 7,200 feet elevation that we were at. It was quite a trick for a helicopter in those days to lift just one man at that altitude. He did just took one man at a time and then came back and got the equipment.
Where was this?
At Fawn Peak, north of Winter. Let me see. Then in 50, I guess it was, I was made squad leader. And went on from there.
How about any other jumps that first year that you can remember?
Well, from... I think we got one fire in 48, one fire in 49. I'm sure I got one. In all those years, I don't think I ever got over one fire. My son, he jumped, and heaven sakes, he got more jumps in one year than I did in the seven or so that I jumped. Most of mine were experimental jumping or something of this nature. Train jumps and maybe a crew fire, but never any more than that.
Were you testing out new chutes? Is that what you were doing?
Yes, we had tried the 32-foot chutes, and at that time jumping in on lookouts, to do work on the lookouts, or fix the telephone lines, something like this.
Hmm. Ever have injuries or been with people who were injured?
I got a tree, when was that, about 49, I guess it was, I got a tree dropped on top of me, and needless to say, I got the typical football knee out of it.
Mm.
Finally, here a couple of years ago, I had it operated on.
Mm.
But nothing other than that.
That's good. Did you ever have any malfunctions?
Oh, a couple of line overs. I had to use emergency chute once. They say that you're supposed to be able to keep the D-ring in your hand as a souvenir. Well, I haven't any idea whatever happened to it. It immediately went out into space somewhere. I wouldn't know.
Huh. What was the circumstances behind that?
It was just a several severe line overs that inverted the canopy and tied it into a ball.
Hmm.
You look up and you don't have anything above your head, well, you immediately start pulling for something.
Yeah. Huh. And you got it deployed early enough.
Oh, yeah. You came down after the emergency shook out. Well, then the main canopy shook loose and came down on both of them, which you come down faster on two than you do on one.
Hmm.
You really hit the ground then.
Yeah. So what was your most memorable jump?
Say not my own jumps, but maybe some of the jumpers that I spotted did. Over in Head of Lake Chelan, I personally knew these two jumpers and I knew their capabilities, and the only spot they had to hit was about 100 yards wide, not even that wide really, on a edge of a cliff, and the cliff fell off about 2,000 feet down near the lake. And if they missed that spot, well, they were in for a long, long walk.
Mm.
And needless to say, they made it fine. I wouldn't have, if I didn't hadn't thought that they would have been able to make it, well, I wouldn't have put them out.
But
that was couple of real good boys. They knew what they were doing and did it well.
Hmm. Wow. Did you ever have any real long back packouts?
No.
What was the reason behind starting the helicopter pickups? Or did they do that after?
Well, in 48 there wasn't any trails, as I previously said, so the Forest Service hired a contract for that, or a contract helicopter for that year to retrieve jumpers, because it was just practically impossible to use trails. They were all washed out.
Yeah.
Most of that summer, I think, we spent rebuilding trails, not fighting fires. I mean, for the 7 years I was here, it was always on project work.
Mm-hmm.
We took 4 years, I think it was, to build a telephone line over the loop-loop, and then 1 year to tear it out.
Oh, yeah?
they crew put up hay, they built trails, they put up lookout towers, we shingled roofs on Forest Service houses around here. We were pretty much a jack of all trades. We could do anything.
Yeah.
And so on. Very, very qualified jumpers.
Hmm.
There was a little bit of training, where any of them can assist.
Yeah. What made you get into jumping?
Oh, there was a ranger. I think his name was Jack Handy. I was born and raised in Okanagan, and I knew him, and he kept after me to try the smoke jumper program, and I didn't have anything else to do, so I sent in an application, and they, and in those days, and especially in 1948, when they had increased the jumpers, I think they had probably 12 the year before, and I think we went up to 30 or something like that all one year. Well, needless to say, they were, they'd take anybody.
You were the first few years of jumping then.
The what?
The first few years of jumping, was it? You came in at a time when a lot of it was still being developed.
Oh, heavens, yes. They were using the old let-down procedures out of trees, which if you could get out of a tree at all, you were mighty lucky with the procedures they had.
What were the procedures?
Threading a rope up through your D-rings and across and making a loop for your foot to stand in, and then hoist yourself up and undo it on the shoulder strap, and then thread it through again so that you could hoist yourself up and undo the other shoulder strap, and then let yourself down. Well, I don't know when it was, long in 53, I think it was, Jim Allen, 52, maybe it was, Jim Allen was here as one of the squad leaders, and we developed a new system for here of sewing a strap on the suits, which they're still using, and being able to get out of your harness and go down that way without, so much easier.
Yeah.
So much quicker.
So you developed the getting out of your harness rather than keeping it on.
Yes.
Huh.
I don't know if they still use some. I think something very similar to that. Yeah. I don't know if they use a quick. Yeah, I think they do. They use a quick release. Shoulder snaps now.
Yeah. Wow.
Come from a now anyway quite a Forest Service family. My son was a smoke jumper. He jumped for 5 or 6 years, I believe. Started in Canada. Canadian smoke jumper program.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went to Cave Junction, Oregon, and then up here for 3 years, I think it was. And then my son-in-law, he's a smoke jumper, and still a smoke jumper here on the base.
I just got done talking with him. He's got quite a few stories to tell.
Oh, I would imagine that his memory is a lot more vivid than mine. It's been quite a while since I jumped.
What other kind of changes did you see between when you started in 1954?
Oh, mainly I think the changes, needless to say, have been for the better. They started using the smoke jumper program. When I was in it, I think the attitude was to keep the smoke jumpers in reserve in case they are needed. Instead of using them for initial attack like they do now, they were kept in reserve. And then they started a program of refresher jumps. If you haven't jumped for 2 weeks or something like that, you take a refresher jump. Well, we would jump in June, take two practice jumps, and then maybe it would be clear till the last of August before we'd ever get a fire jump. So it was like starting all over again when you did finally get a jump. And needless to say, we didn't have any accidents because of it, but I think there certainly could have been. And other people must have thought so because they've changed the program.
Yeah.
We were an awful lot of project work. I think the budget on the base here was quite limited, so they'd ship us out to some ranger district so we could be on their payroll. I think Francis Lufkin probably fought for every penny that he got to keep the program going. Times have certainly changed. Here this year, I think they have kind of swung back for the better again. I was really worried that I thought they were going to lose this base altogether. Mm. But it sounds like now that it might be here to stay.
Yeah, good.
And I did get my new belt buckle.
Oh, great. Hey, that looks good.
The Missoula special.
Yeah, right. But what kind of a, can you talk about some of the equipment that you had when you first began?
Well, they were football. I think they were all used football helmets when I first started. There were some of them were the old leather football helmets. They'd riveted the wire face mask on with a hinge in the front, and then had straps, two straps on the side, just belt buckle type straps that were very cumbersome to get in and out of. And then shortly thereafter, they changed and went to some rubber bungees, which act as a spring. If you got too hard of a opening shock, well, naturally it flew up and then back down and hit you in the chin. We didn't have deployment bags like they had now. I never did jump with what was called the old Eagle parachute. I know Francis Lufkin did, but I have a sneaking suspicion from what he has said and other jumpers that it definitely did separate the men from the boys. Because even on the best opening, you always got two opening shocks. You got when the chute first opened, and then the side canopy opened. Well, then you bounced clear up inside of the canopy and then back down through the lines on the second opening shot. It was a horrible thing. I don't know anybody that didn't have their back and shoulders all covered with strawberries from openings because of the type of equipment we used. We didn't have a deployment bag. The canopy pulled out first and got air. And before your chute, your load lines were ever off of your backpack tray, well, the chute was out and you were getting the opening shot. It was very, very noticeable, the opening shot. One time, I think, one jump, I must have had perfect opening because I never felt the chute open. Any other time, it would just about turn you wrong side out.
What kind of training did you have for the opening shock? Shock tower?
We had the old jump tower out here that, let me see, I think one of the lookout towers they tore down, and Lufkin was able to salvage it, and we set it up for a jump tower. I don't know what year that was, somewhere. I don't think in 48, did we? Yeah, I guess we did. We had a wooden tower that we drug over from across the field. We didn't have, like the parachute loft, it went in the river but with the flood. One of the bunkhouses went in the river. We spent most of the summer in 48 either digging ditches for the, like this is the old parachute loft out here that was started then. And we did an awful lot of building construction. The old bunkhouse up here was put up, and the bathhouse then. I guess that's why we got so much project work, because we started right off putting up buildings and building trails.
What was 49 like as a fire season?
All They never had what you would say a fire bus situation till several years after I left here. I would come back in the summertime, a couple of weeks or whenever Francis needed some help, and either fly as an observer or a spotter in one of the planes whenever he needed help. We brought in that one summer, they brought in jumpers from Missoula, and we had jumpers scattered. I remember I flew over and had Lake Chelan and filled up 2 pages of fire locations and came back over the ridge to where we could get radio communication and call them in. And then went out the next morning with the jump plane from Missoula. And I don't think there was one of them that liked the looks of that country over at the head of Lake Chelan. It's something to behold.
That was in 1970?
70, no.
Before then?
That was probably 57 or 58, somewhere in there. And 70, let me see. Yeah, 70. That was when they had all the helicopters out here. And, they brought out equipment and rented to the Forest Service for handling, loading cargo and whatnot. That was a lot of fires that year.
Yeah.
A lot of big fires around here. Kept everybody pretty busy. Oh, I did go back and work for the Forest Service again about 77, something like that. I ran a tanker base, Nomac, for retardant. So I've had quite an experience with the Forest Service.
I guess. What was the best year?
Probably 54, I suppose. We spent all fall in Cave Junction, Oregon. Not many fires, but we got a few down there. But there again, is that still the same? Keep you in reserve, and you might be needed. Let the ground pounders go in and have the fire. But it has changed.
Yeah. Why do you think they did that? Because of the expense of jumpers?
No, it was just common sense. You train people for one thing. You train them for initial attack. If you can get there in a hurry when a fire is real small, you don't have expense. But if you let people walk into a fire, and the time they get there, they're all wore out, and then they can't fight fire after they get there. That's no good. Usually your fires get away from you.
Right. So why did they keep everybody?
It was just, like I say, because we might be needed. They might have something that would really need on jumpers in the backcountry or something like this. Now, even if fire's alongside of a road, they'll use jumpers. Get them there quick and fast and get on that fire and don't spend bucks on it.
Yeah.
Oh, heavens, I know that, I don't know what year it was. I was flying observation, but maybe it was 54. I don't know. And Pinnacle Creek fire. Flew over Lost River and saw a little smoke coming up and radioed in the location. And that was the only time I ever knew Francis Lufkin to get in an airplane, believe it or not. The only time. He had, when 48 when I started, he had, I think, probably 46. I don't know if he jumped in 46 or not, but he didn't in 47. And he never jumped after that, I know. But, and I'd never had known him to ever get in an airplane. Hmm. But he did get in there and with that bunch of jumpers, and he would not jump them because of the terrain. It was all rock. Trees that were there, the root system was so shallow that if you'd hung up in a tree, the tree would have just gone over with them. Mm. Cliffs of hundreds of feet. Mm. And he just would not put jumpers on it. Mm. Time the ground crew got in there, the fire was gone, and it turned into a project fire that thousands, I mean, must have probably millions of dollars was spent on it. Mm. Because of terrain.
Yeah.
But even so anymore, I still, in country like that, I don't think that they would ever put jumpers on a fire. Hmm. And now they'd use retardant and repellers. You gotta, a jumper's gotta have half a chance to hang up in a tree, or if he doesn't, he's gonna get hurt.
Yeah. Did you ever hang up?
No, I never did.
Hmm. Wow. yeah.
One for me. I my feet were always on the ground. Hmm. Shoot would be in the trees, but my feet would be on the ground. Hmm. I know in Cave Junction that fall, we jumped into the Madrona. And I had never seen trees like that before. I was a country pumpkin. I didn't know what was all about. I know I came slamming into this Madrona tree and my feet were on the ground, but my hip hurt so doggone bad from hitting that tree, and I looked down and saw that I had skimmed all the bark off of the tree. Well, mm-hmm. underneath is just blood red color. Well, when I looked down, my hip hurt so bad I thought that I had smashed my hip and that was blood all over the tree.
Oh, no.
Little things like that to keep you awake. And then, of course, we jumped into the redwoods on one occasion. And, oh, my. We didn't have let-down ropes for things like that.
Mm. What did you do?
Well, thank goodness we made it to the ground and not hang up in those high trees.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd been, you'd still been climbing down.
Yeah. yeah. What other kind of changes have you seen happening since 1948?
Oh, of course, the slotted chutes and tails and chutes they have now. My goodness, they have turned on so much faster. Mm-hmm. And give a guy so much more maneuverability. I still don't know why they don't go to these wing-type chutes where they do have all the forward speed and maneuverability with them. There must be a good reason. The free fallers, I know, use them when, and for their accuracy jumps and whatnot.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll come to it. Who knows?
Well, Alaska's going to it.
Are they?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
They've got the country to make mistakes in, too, you know?
And that would be great.
Mm. How about the people you jumped with? What were they like?
Oh. Well, being a squad leader and whatnot, I never got to know them all that well. Mm. Some of the ones that I started jumping with in 48, of course, got to know them really well. But after you get to be squad leader, you you don't become very good friends of the jumpers. Hmm. Lost several real good friends in airplane accident. Plane crashed up here in the, I don't know if that was 57 or when it was. One of my very best friends, he was squad leader then, and he was killed in the plane crash. Mm. Needless to say, one of my best friends killed in Korea. Mm. That wasn't jumping, though.
What happened with the plane crash up here?
Oh, they had a big investigation, and as far as I know, well, they had flown over the ridge and made a cargo drop, and my good friend Gus was wrestling a very heavy load of cargo trying to get it to the door, and from everything I've heard anyway, that the pilot, I guess, was watching him instead of watching where he was going. And when he looked up, well, he was going right into the ridge. He was had too low.
Mm.
And he pulled the, it was a Twin Beach aircraft, and he pulled back on it too hard, and it came up too steep, stalled out, flipped over, and came in upside down into the mountain.
Mm.
And killed everybody on board. That's what they thought happened anyway.
Yeah. Wow. So how many jumps did you have altogether?
I think it was 39.
39 jumps?
In 7 years.
And most of that was around this area?
Oh, yeah. I did. Oh, I went to Missoula 1 year, Cave Junction several times. Did even get to jump out of the Ford Trimotor once.
Oh, yeah.
But, heavens, I know my son has got as high as 50 jumps in 1 year.
Mm.
And, so my measly few was nothing very exciting about it. Some of these guys get up to their 500 fire jumps and whatnot, or jumps, and they've been around a while.
Yeah, good. You know anybody else who's been jumping in your class, or who's around? Most people just jump 1 or 2 years.
Melvin Northcott, he lives here. He jumped after I did, but I imagine you've got his name. I don't know.
I've got his name, Rich.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure Bill would have given you... They have compiled all the history when they had the reunion here, and I suppose you have all that information.
Mm-hmm.
On all the jumpers and where they live and what they do. That was a very good undertaking when they had that reunion.
That was in 82.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah. Yeah, we were involved pretty heavily in helping them do that, of course, by living right here.
Yeah.
My wife got involved. My daughter got involved.
Mm.
It was a lot of fun.
That's good. So a lot of the people, I guess, particularly in your class, are from here.
Yes. Most everybody was... there was a few. There was a few out of state, but... most of them from around Winthrop, Twist, Okanagan, Tenasket, local areas.
Mm.
The biggest percentage of them were local kids. You didn't have the... it wasn't tough to get into the program. Mm. You put your name in, and chances are that you would be accepted if you had any kind of firefighting experience at all. But anymore, they put you into a computer, and you have to come up through the Forest Service program, and
yeah.
Pretty tough.
Yeah.
I know my son, he, of course, got in the back door by going to Canada and jumping up there and then being accepted by the Forest Service.
How many people were in your rookie class?
I think We had the, up until that time, we had the largest rookie class, I think, was 24 here. And that, of course, Missoula standards, that's nothing. But, I think there was, 24 rookies. With, you know, you have to appreciate that we didn't have any accommodations. The bunkhouse, cookhouse was still there. The bunkhouse had to be moved and all the replumbed, and training facilities were none. We had to build those. So you can understand why I say I don't remember too much about the training, because we were doing an awful lot of building. With a very, very bad year for floods.
What did you build as new training facilities? What did you build for new training
facilities? Well, we built them right over here. We built the, moved in the jump tower and the torture racks, and of course the tires on the ground, and put up a trampoline type for doing rolls off on the trampoline. Let down procedure and shoot manipulation tower by the standards they have now. Well, we were very, very antiquated, but we got by. We used the old Norseman then. Single, yeah, single engine Nordyne, if you want to. I guess there's still a few of them left in Canada and Alaska. I think we had four airplane pilots the first year I was here. And of course, the story went that there was only one of them had a valid pilot's license.
Oh, yeah?
Something was wrong with all the others with their license. They hadn't renewed them, or some silly thing like that. That was, you would, you know, you always imagine that Forest Service would be very strict on something like that, but I guess they didn't check licenses.
Or else they didn't care.
We had a one pilot called Joe Harrell. He was different, very, very different. I know that one of the jumpers walked by in a casual way, joking, and said, well, see, you're working on that old bucket of bolts. And he took after him with a wrench. I mean, he was very serious about that bucket of bolts. He did have a problem. One of them, I think, that was, didn't have a valid license. Oh, we, you know, it was a very good program. Most all of the guys that I started with were going to college, either out of the service and in the college program, or had just started. Most all of them put themselves through college by the jumper programs, earning enough money in the summertime to go to school. I know that I saved every paycheck my first year, and I think I saved $1,300, and that put me through 1 year of school.
That's great.
Yeah, I know my son did the same thing. He would earn enough money in the summertime to put himself through school.
Do you recall anything of 19 stories from 1945 death, or rumored death of one of the jumpers of the Black Battalion? You never heard of that?
No. And you don't have a name or anything like that?
No. He, we just heard that he, that there was an earlier death in the Mann Gulch fire of jumpers, and that was it. And And yet no one seems to know of it.
I know that the Army paratroopers jumped in on Bunker Hill, and that must have been about 1945. I know that they had casualties, my goodness, broken legs and arms. And
what was the cause of that?
Well, they were an Army paratrooper outfit.
And they weren't used to
it? It was a Negro battalion. And they was in the wilderness area back here.
Am I interrupting?
No, no. And they jumped them in there on the, to help fight that fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's one of those Negroes got killed on the, in there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think 1945 is the first time I was ever on a fire, and your eyes get awful big by all these stories and whatnot. But I don't ever remember of, and I know Francis would have known if one of them was killed back in there, and I'm sure they were. I would have heard about it.
Hmm.
There was a lot of stories, though. The Packers would take a white mattress cover or something like this and put over them and crawl through the brush and growl, and they had to get them all psyched up, of course, that there was bear in there. And, oh, they just tormented those poor guys. They had never seen the mountains before, a lot of them, and to jump them into a country like that, that was quite an experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't have the protective clothing and gear that smoke jumpers had.
Mm-hmm.
They just jumped with their fatigues and were like they would in a battle.
What do you, what were the procedures when you would jump in, say, when you first started jumping, and you got to the ground, and,
I don't think they've changed very much. You immediately put your streamers out, and you're double L, and, I don't know if they still use that, procedure or not, but, had all your code that, for signals if, of course, we didn't have radios like you have now. We had the old SX radio sets that we did, believe it or not, have one of those on my first fire jump. So.
Mm.
And you had to climb the tree and hang a big long wire from tree to tree, and then it was crystal. And if you were very lucky, you'd find the right frequency that you could talk to the lookout.
Mm. You didn't talk to the plane.
No, we were finding this fire that the lookout had reported in there, and we'd flash the mirror, and he'd look through his rangefinder and tell us if we were close to the area or not. And about then, the cloudburst came over, and if there was a fire, it put it out. So.
That was on your first fire jump?
Yeah.
So you'd never found the fire?
No, heavens no. We just about drowned.
And what'd you do then? Spent the night?
Oh, yes, we put up the chute, one of the cargo chutes, to try to keep some of the water off of us, and dug a trench through the center of it so that all the water would run through.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was quite a rainstorm. And lightning. I think every tree on that hillside got re-hit by lightning that night.
Mm.
That was a dandy. Of course, it was the real experience, of course, was going off and being taken out with the helicopter. That was,
mm-hmm.
that was neat. I don't think that I ever had a... You running out of tape?
No, not yet.
I don't think I ever had a either guy got out with a helicopter or horses or some darn thing. I was always pretty lucky.
Hmm.
Or else on a crew fire or some darn thing that and never hung up in a tree. Well, packed the angel on my shoulder.
That's great. Never had an injury.
No, no.
Great. So the helicopter came right to where you were then.
On top of the peak. Yeah, we had to hike up to the top of the. And,
the equipment must have weighed.
At that time, I don't think it's changed much. I think it was 110 pounds was what you would pack out.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we were using the old ski trooper pack boards, the kidney busters. They were the aluminum tubing type pack boards that you carried your weight right here on your hips. And that's why they called the kidney buster. It was really too much weight for that kind of a pack board. And we used the, at that time we used the down sleeping bags. Little light down sleeping bag. Didn't have the disposable tools or sleeping bags or anything or disposable food. We used the old Army sea rations.
Which were dropped to you. All of that was dropped to you.
Yes. And let me tell you, you didn't stay out any longer than you had to with eating those Army sea rations. They were probably 5 or 6 years old when we got them, and they didn't taste very good.
And when you were done with the fire, did you pack them back out, or you?
Oh, not the sea rations, heavens, no. They were probably buried long before then. You could go quite a while without eating before you'd ever have to eat that sea ration.
Mm-hmm. What kind of tools did you use? Fire tools?
Same that you use now, the shovel and the Pulaski.
And crosscut.
Yeah, at that time it experimenting on how to drop tools and supplies, and everything we had was Army surplus. Got it. Lufkin was quite a scrounger. He could get this Army surplus equipment, and we would build something out of it and try that, and build something else and try it. Didn't have chainsaws, of course. We had crosscuts and tied the two handles together and tied a big long streamer on them and tried free-falling. And unless it went right into the rocks, well, it worked pretty good. It just bounced when it hit the ground and didn't hurt the saw. Then they got some small surplus drift chutes and put those onto them and, oh, just tried everything. We dropped a cook stove out of the old Nordyne one time to a trail crew. And I think we put two chutes on the thing because it weighed so much. Well, needless to say, it broke loose out of the harness anyway, and when the chutes opened, it broke loose. And of course, nothing was left of the stove. But it was an awful lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
Something didn't work, well then you went back and tried something else. Ever, of course, it was the same as now. You didn't, ordinary jumper didn't pack his own chute. You had to be a qualified rigger. You had to have a license. And I assume it's the same now. They have to be qualified riggers. I think most of us all were master riggers. We're up till Christmas time out piling brush, pruning trees, something like this, and then come in and in the spring sew up chutes and do all the maintenance. And not much has changed except now I don't think that they do project work. I think jumpers usually just stay right here on the base. I personally think it would be it's a real shame that they're not out doing project work, learning something. Keep them close enough that if they do have need for them, they can get back here in a short period of time and be gone.
Mm-hmm. We do have quite a bit of project work in Adamatua. And it's a new sub-base system so that we can do project work. But what other kind of things did you work on? Developments of the jumping system, like food. Did you change the food?
After I had left the program and I got into Boy Scouts, helping the Boy Scout program, where we got into real light dried foods and whatnot, and gave some to Francis so he could try it with the jumpers, and they liked them very much, and ordered quite a few of them and tried those for several years. Well, it seems like once you were a jumper around here anyway, you were a pretty small valley. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. And pretty close family. We've always kept close contact with each other. What are you going to do? Write a thesis or something for college?
No, this is part of the oral history project that they're making for the reunion this summer. And I'm just, which maybe will be eventually a book or part of it.
I can tell you a good story about Missoula.
Okay.
Great. We flew in, the only time I ever jumped over there, I jumped out of Moose Creek somewhere in Idaho. And hiked down to Moose Creek Airport. And there were two Ford Trimotors. And there was enough of us, they put half of us in one plane, half in the other, and both took off about the same time. And we were kind of hedge hopping going down into Missoula. Like there would be a telephone line or a fence or something, and he'd jump up over it. And just as we were ready to land, oh my goodness, he took a sharp evasive action and went off to the right and looked out the window. Well, here was the other Ford Trimotor had been landing, coming in from the other direction, and both were landing from opposite directions.
Oh, no.
So they both went around and did things properly that time and lit from the right way.
Did you ever have any near accidents with the plane that you were?
Oh, we had one pilot that was always running out of gas. Running out of gas. I don't care where he would let a tank, and it was in the Nordyne. It was single engine. And he'd reach down and switch the fuel, and off we'd go again. Well, it was kind of a challenge to the jumpers to be who would be the one to jump out on him. But he would always run out of gas, either too low to the ground or over water or on takeoff or some damn thing where you could never jump out. So nobody ever got to jump out on him and start an investigation. If somebody would have been able to have jumped out on him, well, then there'd been an investigation. Well, how come you jumped? Well, ran out of gas. Oh, it was over concrete. He flew in there. We went in to get gas, and there was a big stump patch out over the end of the runway. He got off the ground about 50 feet up in the air, 100 feet, I don't know how high, but he ran out of gas on takeoff.
Oh, no.
And reached down and sput, 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 and we'd go again. Everybody tried to get him, but they never could make it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, we were flying to Cave Junction. Everybody was asleep in the airplane. And I guess maybe we got too close to Hanford. I don't know. Mm. But the first thing I know, well, the lookout in here was one of their black, painted, coal black interceptor airplane that they used around Hanford. Boy, he made a pass at us, and I know the pilot woke up and he got the heck out of there in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. So you went out to south quite a ways.
Yeah. See, we used had satellite base for several years down at Joseph and Enterprise before they started a base down in that country, permanent base. La Grande, I think, was a permanent base. I think they've discontinued it again. But maybe they'll have a satellite base program there. I don't know. But anyway, we would send a crew down to Joseph and Enterprise every summer. And then after that, well, then they'd send them a satellite to La Grande. Well, then La Grande got its own base and started its own program. And now then they discontinued it. Mainly experimental. Just everything you did was trial and error. But I will say I don't know how many years it was that Lufkin went here without a lost time accident. Years and years without a lost time accident. I know when I got a tree dropped on top of me, well, it was late in the afternoon, and took me into the doctor and got my knee fixed up and was able to hobble over and sit behind a sewing machine the next day, so I didn't have a lost time accident out of it anyway.
Pretty good. Oh, that's great.
There was a lot of those. On the time I was here, I think there was only one kid that ever refused to jump.
On a first jump?
Yep. And they, I think, found him employment somewhere else. But you take 3 weeks of indoctrination, living with all kids your own age and whatnot. Well, boy, it would be harder for somebody not to jump than to jump.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you would never, never, ever be able to look them in the face again if you never jumped. You know?
Yeah.
And I have a sneaking suspicion on the second or third jump, well, that had a lot of precedent.
Because
it was mighty, mighty attractive not to jump.
Yeah.
What am I doing up here?
What are we all doing up here? Do you ever have any pretty wild fires themselves?
No. One fire a year, you couldn't really have wildfire.
No.
All nice little campfires. And heavens, we got one in Oregon that was creek came by, and we were able to get an irrigation ditch going and just real irrigated the thing and put it out by the creek.
Mostly two-manners is what you went on.
Yes, yes. In those days, that fire was very big at all. They wouldn't put jumpers on them. And if they were close to a road, they wouldn't put jumpers on them because the ground pounders could get there. They could handle them. Didn't use jumpers because, well, we might get a fire in the backcountry someplace where we will need you.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat here and waited.
Hmm. Wow. And did project work.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Did you ever do any project burning?
No. No, we did experimental pruning. Pruned trees 16 feet high off the ground. We pruned them out in the fall with snowshoes on. And if you can imagine, in 5 or 6 feet of snow, pruning trees on snowshoes and getting tangled up in all your brush. That was fun.
Yeah.
We did that when it was 30 below, believe it or not.
Hmm.
Piled an awful lot of brush in the fall. One way that you didn't have to be on the airport payroll, you would be on the district payroll.
Mm.
Luckman just didn't have the money.
Airport meaning the jumping, the jump base. The jump base and the district were together at that time?
No, they were entirely separate. They had their own funding.
Mm.
But Francis to get on the phone, well, if you've got any project work that you need done, well, of course, that would come out of the district funds. If he could get jumpers out onto the district's payroll, well, it didn't come out of his own.
Uh-huh.
Well, at the end of the year, if he had money left over, well, it was some supplies that he could buy. All these buildings you see around here were built that very way, by him saving money and being able to buy some new supplies or send out and get some surplus property. And, he was quite a scrounger.
Hmm. What kind of pay were you giving?
$122.50 every 2 weeks.
Hmm.
And that was squad leader's pay, I might say. No overtime.
No overtime, even on fires.
Nope, straight time.
You only worked 8 hours a day.
If you worked more, you still got just straight time.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
No hazard pay?
No hazard pay.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight pay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did work over 8 hours, I know when got a permanent position, well, you had comp time. You took it off in the fall. You didn't get paid for your extra hours. You got $122.50 every 2 weeks, period.
Mm.
And then in the fall, you wanted to go deer hunting or something, you had all these hours built up, well, you got to take them off. And you still got paid. No, there wasn't. It was much later when hazard pay and flight pay and all of those little niceties came along. I don't know who ever dreamed up that kind of stuff, but the taxpayers stand for it. What the heck?
Do you know when it has changed?
I don't. Way after I was here.
Mm.
My goodness. Probably in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever do any water jumps?
Nope. Heavens no, they kept us so far away from water that they didn't want us to drown.
Hmm. Even when you were spotting me.
Oh, gosh, no.
Yeah. Did you ever spot a rescue jump?
Oh, I can't remember if I did or not. I jumped on a rescue jump, but I helped pack out a ranger over in the Mount Baker.
What happened?
Oh, he fell down through the trap door on the lookout tower and thought he broke his back.
Mm.
He didn't. He'd sprained it. But they brought in a helicopter to take him out, and the helicopter broke a rotor, crashed, and the doctor that was aboard broke his arm. And So after that, well, we just had stretcher. Well, the horses had been... And it was so brushy, you couldn't get off the trail. The trail was there, period. And the horses had wore a great big deep groove into the soft earth. And there, on an ordinary stretcher, there's a man on each side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you couldn't do that.
Mm.
You had to walk in line. And we didn't have any way and two guys packing another man, you can only go for maybe 50 yards, and then you're all in.
Yeah.
And then somebody else would take over. Well, that's how we had to do it. Came back and developed some yoke system that four guys could walk in line and pack a stretcher.
Hmm.
And they'd carry it on their shoulders. You know, you develop those things as when a situation arose.
Right. Do you ever have any emergency exits on the plane?
No.
No problems except for the guy running out of gas.
Joker. No, no.
Hmm.
Extremely careful.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the game is safety.
You hit static lines when you were jumping.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. All static line jumping.
Mm.
Never. Oh, golly, I think one of the small planes caught a... He was sending out supplies or something, and he caught a small chute on the tail of the plane. And they had to set down. They didn't get hurt. Wrecked the airplane.
Mm. Did your jump gear, your jumpsuit change between 1948 and 1954?
No. No, we were still using the felt, sewn-in felt for padding in the sleeves and the knees and whatnot. It was much later when they started using that resilient-type rubber and had it in pockets and the fire-resistant suits and whatnot. It was much later. No, we were still using football helmets and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Probably out there, and I should go to work, I suspect.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.